people were brought to S21. Their height was measured with this device, and a basic history was taken. It included place and date of birth, and most important, what they had done before the revolution. Deutsch kept precise records to prove his dedication to sweeping the country clean of traitors. To the right, in the corner of the room, is a case containing a special photography chair originally developed by the French police.
One of the strangest aspects of totalitarian regimes is apparently their desire to document their activities.
In the late 1980s, Australian Helen Jervis began helping document the Cambodian genocide.
This happens in the bureaucracy of death, where my job is to photograph the prisoner. That person's job is to take the biographical information, and that one is to administer the torture. And somehow or another, this also distances individual people from the total responsibility.
Even Deutsch himself claimed that his only job was to supervise the processing of these people, to extract information and record it, and then to make sure they were disposed of. This is Hoot Bo Panhar, whose image has for many come to stand for the heartlessness of the Khmer Rouge regime and the power of love. Bo Panhar had already suffered greatly when her passionate love letters to an Angkor cadre condemned her. Deutsch took particular interest in her, and the file of her confessions in the archives is hundreds of pages long, longer than some of the top-ranking officials. The Bo Panhar Audiovisual Resource Center in Phnom Penh is named after her. It is dedicated to collecting image and sound archives related to Cambodia and sharing them with the public. You can hear Bo Panhar's story in Anytime Stop number 93. I hope you will have time to listen to it. In the center of the room, the images on the panels are large and compelling. Some people here are seated in their photography chair. There are also several children. Nong Chan Paul was a child survivor of S21. He remembered watching his mother being photographed here when he was 8 years old. The Khmer Rouge had taken him away in a jeep with his mother and little brother. They were told they would be meeting his father. But his father was already gone. At Deutsch's trial, Nong Chan Paul said that riding in the jeep had been fun. The happiness did not last for long. At S21, they photographed his mother and shouted at her.
And at that time, she was sick. She also had swollen legs, and she was pushed around. When she almost fell down, the person pulled her by the hair to stand up. When I think of that event, it seems so new, so vivid in my mind. They slapped her, and she was kicked, and she fell down on the floor. Before she could stand and make a correct posture to be photographed, she was kicked.
She had never been in front of a camera before. Nong Chan Paul saw her again only once, looking down at him from a window high up in the prison. Most children were taken from their mothers and killed immediately. But Nong Chan Paul was still alive when Vietnamese and Cambodian soldiers liberated the prison. He and his brother hid under a pile of clothes until they were saved. It's an extraordinary story, and you can hear more of it in Anytime Stop 90. Our next stop in this building, however, is number 25. As you enter the next room, please turn right. This image shows prisoners in mass detention on an upper floor of the complex. Their ankles are bound together by shackles like the ones in Building B. The picture was painted by Van Aert, who experienced it himself. In 1978, the third year of the Khmer Rouge era, the regime was beginning to collapse. Van Aert had been working in Bat Thambong province when he was told he was being relocated to cut cane. Instead, he was taken to a regional prison in a temple and tortured with electricity. Then, he was transferred to S21. You can see him in the bottom row, near the center. He's the tall prisoner, second from the left. At the far left, the shortest prisoner is Philo Ardis Bume. One had lived in these conditions for a month before he was moved to the building in the center of the courtyard to paint pictures of Pol Pot. When the Khmer Rouge fled, they took him on a forced march. He managed to escape. After so much anguish, he yearned for a quiet life, but he could not forget this place. Varna did not undergo interrogation here, but other prisoners told him of their sufferings, and he was determined to bear witness for them. So he painted the pictures of torment you see in this building. You can hear his eloquent plea for justice later in Stop 32, the final stop on this tour. But right now, here and in the next two rooms, you will find stops featuring his images and descriptions of suffering and torture. To hear about Varnard's recollections of life in mass detention, press the yellow button. Many years after Varnard painted his picture of mass detention, the experience remained vivid in his mind. He was allowed only two small spoonfuls of soup twice a day. One prisoner got so sick that the guard fed him extra. He died anyway, and someone came and kicked him in the head, angry that he had not survived to sign his confession. Bodies were often left where they lay for hours. Prisoners slept with corpses. Bugs swarmed in at night, attracted by the harsh light. There was almost no electrical power anywhere in the country. But S21 had 24-hour electricity from its own generator. Starving prisoners stuffed the insects into their mouths. Once, a guard noticed and made Varnard spit a cricket out. He hit Varnard's ears again and again with his shoe until his eyes were almost bleeding. These seven prisoners survived when the Khmer Rouge fled. From left to right are a mechanic, a carpenter, a sculptor, two painters, a translator, and an engineer. All had skills that were needed here. They worked and lived separately in the building in the center of the courtyard. The painter Varnard is the tallest one. His arm is around the shoulders of fellow artist Bume. Nearby, a reproduction of a Varnard painting shows prisoners being sprayed with water from their veranda. It was their only chance to get clean. Bume explained in his testimony at Dutch trial.
We would take off our shorts and then remove it from our legs, one leg at a time. And then the water would be spread from our thigh through a hose. And some would get soaked, some would miss the water. It was so miserable.
The guards pointed at them and joked about their bodies.
It has been 30 years or more already, but I know that every time we had to take a bath, everyone had to be naked. It was like hell.
Out of respect, Varnard portrayed the victims clothed. Afterwards, they had to mop up the excess water with their shorts and sleep on the still wet floor. Many developed rashes and other skin diseases. On the other side of the room are instruments used for torture. Nearby are paintings of victims during torture. One shows a prisoner being carried on a stick, like a butchered animal. Varnard saw this himself one night. He thought the man was dead until he raised his head and moaned. In another painting, a victim is being whipped by four cadres. Varnard made this picture for Bume, who told him that when one interrogator got tired of beating him, another took over. Bume endured a year and a half here. He learned the names of his tormentors as they talked to each other. For a time, he was tortured three times a day.